everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. And today is a big day. It's a big news day, actually, because it is a Wednesday. J.R. Jackson, we need you here because of how big the news is and how big the debate's going to be on the show today.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it's going to be a predicting news, a big news day, because usually I get to respond to some madness that happens the day before. But this time, I mean, I guess it can be an equal, on equal footing with that. You know, we get to see what's going on tonight and see if there's any kind of stability in any kind of debate form in our presidential process this cycle. I mean, it's still yet to be seen. After what happened last time, I honestly have no faith.
Yeah, look, I don't have any general faith. I'm like Natalie Imbruglia in that way, but no, I don't think that tonight's debate is gonna be anything like the one last week. I think it's gonna be interesting. Stuff will be said. Hopefully Kamala Harris won't be exposed to coronavirus, but I don't expect much to happen, which is why good news, bad news. So the good news is we are doing live commentary, and after the debate, we'll be doing analysis on TYT, which is great and important. It's the debate, it's, you know, the election. On the other hand, I feel like we're doing too much of it because it's the VP debate. It's not gonna be like the last one. Do we need 2 hours? We'll find out, maybe. I'm sure we'll fill it.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know.
There's enough. There's plenty of topics to go over. And now, usually, you know, the vice presidential debate may not. We'll talk about it later. But the one small thing is that he has to talk for Trump because no one knows what Trump is going to say, what he has said, and what he actually believes and thinks about things. So Mike Pence now has to be the person that, for Republican voters, at least Trump Republican voters, they think needs someone to steady that ship. And since Mike Pence says things for 5 minutes straight and ends up saying nothing, he's right on brand with most Republicans in the first place.
Yeah, maybe we'll see. But we will have that coverage. We're gonna do after the debate 1.5 hours and then 30 minutes for the members. I guess the good part of having, you know, that extended period is that myself and Ben Dixon will be on. We'll get to say something, so that'll be nice. We'll be with Cenk. Anyway, that's just the first of the ribbing of Cenk Uygur, because today we're gonna be debating a couple different things here on the show. One informally and one quite formally, perhaps two formally. Has Trump lost it? And we're gonna talk about that both in a figurative and a literal sense. Because Cenk Uygur had a big prediction yesterday, and we're going to be talking a little bit of more about that. And if you're watching on Twitch at twitch.tv/TYT, we're gonna be doing a little vote about that prediction, and Twitch gets a vote. So you're definitely going to want to head over there if you're not already maybe watching on YouTube or something like that. But regardless of wherever you are, please hit the like button, share the stream, let more people know that we're live. And if you send us messages, tweets, chats, super chats, all of that, we'll be responding to those as we go.
Empowering your audience, John Adarola. One more small big news note for JR Wednesday, hashtag JR Wednesday. I've mentioned my mother on the show a few times, my father as well. They've discovered that I do a weekly morning show with you, John, every Wednesday, just now, their own son. So hi, mom and dad. I'm glad you guys have finally caught up and joined me. Shout out to Don and Bessie Jackson. Love you guys. I hope I make you proud today.
Hello to JR's family. You know, JR's been doing this for like 2 years, like every week for 2 years. I can't tell you how many we've done. And in fact, like every single day of the week, we have a sort of our pattern at TYT. Monday's Francesca, Tuesday's a guest, Wednesday's JR, Thursday's a guest, and then Brent. I like every day, but I mark time by the Wednesdays. I feel like the time between JR being on the show passes so fast, especially in 2020. And apparently for his family, it has too, because they didn't even know it was happening. But anyway,
just my parents.
Just your parents. Well, let's give them a show then. Let's give them something to talk about.
I'm ready, man.
I'm making a lot of music references for some reason for me. Anyway, with that, let's jump into it. A lot of fun. We're gonna see what we can get to. The last bit of government relief in regards to the coronavirus pandemic feels like it was 6 months ago. Oh wait, that's because it was. They gave us a little bit of money, a little bit of enhanced unemployment. That's basically it. And then month after month after month has gone by with hundreds of thousands of people dying in between. Now, they were debating possibly doing something again, but Donald Trump, as of yesterday, is saying, no, 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 we don't need any of that. Not now, not until at least after the election, tweeting,
Nancy Pelosi is asking for $2.4 trillion to bail out poorly run, high crime Democrat states, money that is in no way related to COVID-19.
That's not true, but whatever.
We made a very generous offer of $1.6 trillion, and as usual, she is not negotiating in good faith. I am rejecting their request and looking to the future of our capital C country. I have instructed my representatives to stop negotiating until after the election when, immediately after I win, we will pass a major stimulus bill that focuses on hardworking Americans and small business.
Small is capitalized, business capitalized, who knows why.
I have asked Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell not to delay, but to instead focus full time on approving my outstanding nominee to the SCOTUS, Amy Coney Barrett. Our economy is doing very well. The stock market is at record levels. Jobs and unemployment are also coming back in record numbers. We are leading the world in economic recovery, and the best is yet to come.
I can't believe you did that part.
That's the only reason we're doing this is because that was there. No, of course not. So look, we're gonna debate possible reasons for this, but you top level, he's saying, screw everybody. If you've lost your job, if you're about to lose your home, you're about to lose your business, you're on the edge, you can't make ends meet. We'll see what happens after the election. I mean, I don't know how you can more hold something hostage than he is doing right now. And what he's holding is life-saving aid to the tune of trillions of dollars.
He continues to think that anything he says, because this has been told of him for his entire life, that he can do anything. He can set fire to anything and nobody will blame him. No one will say, hey, but Donald, you're the one who caused this problem. Donald, you're the one who stopped talks. Donald, there was people talking and negotiating. Of course, we know Steve Mnuchin and people that are under your administration were doing it in bad faith, but still, they were doing it for show. You're supposed to continue that as the president right now, right? You're supposed to continue to have cover for the people who are actually not looking to do anything. You're not supposed to say, hey, you guys, we're the ones that are looking to not do anything for you. So we're gonna cut off all negotiations and all talks until after the election when I win, quote unquote, yeah. I win. Then after I win, we're gonna pass something else. This sounds similar to something else he said he's gonna do after he wins again. He's gonna pass some kind of healthcare policy that he still hasn't told us what he's gonna pass. He'll probably say it again tomorrow. I have a healthcare plan that's in place. It's gonna have something to do with making sure we take care of your pre-existing conditions and the disaster that's Obamacare. What's your plan, bro? Oh, where's the stimulus bill that you've got planned, President Trump? Where's that? No, but now, in the one specific tweet I do want to focus on, one part of it. Our economy is doing very well, based on what? The stock market is at record levels. Maybe it is, but it's not after these tweets. That's for sure. So yeah. He's just pointing out, hey, you guys, the stock market, I want you guys to know, the stock market is at this level right now. By the time you finish this string of tweets, it will be at a different place.
Yeah, that's true. And indeed it was. Indeed it was. And we're gonna get a little bit from Fox News about that particular effect on this. Because again, remember, they might say the economy, but they mean one very specific part of it, and that is stocks. That's what they care about. Now, here's the thing. He is apparently done with this whole process, but there are other people that would prefer that the government do something, including such biased people as Federal Reserve Chairman Powell, who said the expansion is still far from complete. At this early stage, I would argue that the risks of policy intervention are still asymmetric. Too little support would lead to a weak recovery, creating unnecessary hardship. By contrast, the risks of providing too generous relief are smaller. Even if policy actions ultimately prove to be greater than needed, they will not go to waste. So he's saying, like, do whatever you can. And if it's too much, cool, that's fine. No, but if it's not enough, then we might have an incredibly weak recovery, which Trump evidently doesn't care about. And some would say Mitch McConnell's willingness to go along with this, which remains to be seen, we'll have to find out, could be related to the fact that he's looking at the polls. He sees that Trump has a very low chance of actually legitimately winning this thing. And a little bit of economic chaos for Joe Biden, not necessarily the worst thing. And it's not like there's no precedent for a Democrat entering office and having to cover for the economic chaos produced by the former Republican president. So anyway, Trump is apparently thinking this is, I guess, good politics, that he's just done with this. There is polling to indicate that that is not the case. There's a new poll of the 928 registered voters who responded to the online Hill-Harris X survey between the end of September, beginning of October. 74% said the Senate should pass a new economic relief bill, while only 26% said lawmakers should take on the Supreme Court confirmation process first. So in terms of the priorities of the population, it is way skewed to dealing with COVID for obvious reasons, and it's not even really a partisan thing. 88% of Democrats, 77% of independents, and 55% of Republicans all say do the aid before you do the Supreme Court. A majority of Republicans.
Yeah, because it makes sense. That's the problem. So he thinks, again, as he thinks nothing will stick to him, he can say, oh, well, Nancy Pelosi and Democrats are holding up talks. Therefore, I'm going to be the strong guy and cut them off completely, and everyone's going to be on my side. Disregarding completely the majority of the country that wants certain things to happen in the order that they would like for them to happen and because of the importance of them. But when you don't care about people, when you actually hate certain people or think they need to be in a lower position for you to remain where you are, you don't have any room in your brain to consider their positions. You don't consider that they're also sick. You don't consider that they've lost their jobs, that they're worrying about rent and food and their kids and schooling and all the things that are falling down from this. He's proven this over and over and over again. So what's actually frustrating for me is that we're still surprised that he's willing to torch so many people's lives to help himself. I mean, I would be surprised that he's saying it so openly that I'm gonna hold this off until I can try to win. That's probably the worst thing you can say. You guys wait in your suffering until I get a chance to do something for myself, and then I'll act like I'll do something for you later. That never works from a politician's point of view. I don't care how much you've lied and convinced enough idiots that you have any kind of a populist point of view for anyone. I'm a billionaire, which you're not. I'm a billionaire, but I'm going to work for the American people. Then in the next breath, you say, yeah, but you know, you guys wait and hold off on everything you need just to survive while I try and get reelected. I'm not sure which advisors are talking to him, but they need to stop.
I don't like it. The all they needed to do was hire me like a year ago, and Trump would have cruised to recover, like to re-election so easily. I don't know who's advising him. I would say the voices in his head. I don't know because this is not only objective. Like, this is so wrong. Like, forget the politics. So wrong to leave people out there without any aid, but it's not like that's new in 2020. That's what they've been doing. But if you are gonna consider the political implications, how could this possibly be your strategy going into the election? Like, he seems to want to focus this thing back on coronavirus since he got it. That seems bad since Biden is trouncing him on that topic. But so, like, hypothetically, the economy could be a good thing to divert to, but you're saying I don't care if the economy doesn't improve over the next month. The whole thing's just crazy. But there are also added layers of crazy internally to Trump, because after tweeting that he's done with this whole process last night, and the stock market responded by falling and everyone started freaking out, then Trump seemed to want to indicate, oh, okay, I get it. That was bad. I shouldn't do that. So then later he tweeted something to the effect of he would sign a standalone bill for stimulus checks, which I get from a populist point of view why he would want to pretend that he's in favor of that. Well, then why haven't you been pushing for that for literally 6 months now? And he said this morning, move fast, I am waiting to sign, Speaker Pelosi. So he's waiting for that. But then get this, Jeff Stein, reporter for the Washington Post, tweeted this morning, good morning. In case there's any confusion about Trump's tweets last night, White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows today said the stimulus negotiations are off. So he says they're done, then he pretends there's a hypothetical bill that he would sign. He wakes up this morning, says it again. Sorry, I'm implying that he slept there. I'm not sure that happened based on his tweeting over the past 24 hours. And then his chief of staff says, no, he really is done though. He really is done with this whole thing. What a terrible strategy in virtually every way that it could be.
Yeah, so even the pushback, but the reversal, his backpedaling's now gone through, was affected, or at least I think he's a bit afraid of the right people. I was just talking about how he doesn't really give a damn about the American people or the situations they're going through. But the Business Roundtable, which is the political group of organizations of people who represent CEOs, which he does care about because those are the money guys that fuel him, those guys came out and were against this. Part of their statement said, we're troubled by the sudden halt of negotiations. Millions of American workers, families, and businesses are suffering. All that stuff that they don't really mean, because in reality, it's about them protecting themselves because the stock market took a hit. It's not actually about the American people, but they had to pose it that way so that they don't look like the idiots that they are. Anyway, so that's the pressure that he received that actually made him think twice about it. But we, as you pointed out, And as Trump usually goes, any kind of response or backpedal is still toothless because he actually doesn't know how to reverse these types of things. He's not the one negotiating, number one. You're not creating a bill. Again, this dictator thinks he's the judicial, the executive, and the legislative branch. He thinks he's everything. So he thinks he can tweet on top of it all. I've informed the entire Republican Party to not negotiate any more at all about any of this. Bro, you're not in the Senate, you're not in Congress. Sit back and do what you're gonna do, which is nothing at this point, from your balcony that you need to look at the American people from. The pressure comes from money, guys, and now he decides to backpedal on it. Just think about the route that is, and how he went. He came into to try and run for president in the first place, and said he's going to represent the normal guy and the American people. Look who's affecting his thought process. It's the CEOs and the people at the business roundtable. That's who's affecting his decisions.
Yeah. So, like, he's president. Like, he literally has unlimited money to try to use to not only do a good thing, protect people from losing their jobs, dying from COVID, all of that, but assure his reelection, and he doesn't want to do that. He just doesn't seem to want to do that. Let's turn to a slightly different angle on this. Fox and Friends, their relationship with Donald Trump over the past couple of weeks seems a little bit different. We'll get into a few of those examples in a bit. But the first has to do with his declaration yesterday that he's not interested in any more negotiations over COVID recovery funds. This is how this morning Brian Kilmeade responded to that stance by the president.
Hours meetings with Steve Mnuchin and the speaker, both have indicated that they both want to do a deal. For the president to come out with a tweet like that with the market still open, just crash the market and cost people a lot of money, knowing that an hour before, federal chairman Jerome Powell put out this statement, they're warning that failing to inject more federal help into the economy would risk weakening the tenuous recovery. Yeah. The country needs stimulus checks, airlines needs help, and of course you have 30,000 people who are about to lose their jobs and be furloughed through no fault of their own. The tourist injury, the hospitality industry have been destroyed. If you work in a hotel, you don't need me to tell you that. So get the PPP program financed again. They have to find a way to work out this thing behind closed doors, because riding the markets, it does nothing but have people lose money and gets people extremely stressed. And with the market closed, the president says, let's do this again. I understand negotiating tactics, but not at this point. I actually think the president now has more pressure on him now than he had before his first tweet, because Nancy Pelosi clearly could turn around and say, well, it's not my fault, I was having talks. So it looks like the president's the one to blame now. But I don't know how he has leverage.
Yeah, but he is willing to, you know, people really want those $1,200 checks, and he is very specific. I will write the checks, Nancy, pick up the phone, let's do a deal. We will keep you posted. Who knows, maybe he'll be tweeting this morning during our show.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe. Maybe there's a small chance he'll be tweeting. Maybe there's a small chance that you're speaking directly to him, as you always do. So there was a little bit from Ducey there to try to like spin. Well, yeah, but he says he wants the checks, even though, again, chief of staff says he's done. He's not actually interested in any of that. But Kilmeade's like, come on, Trump, man, why are you doing this? I'm looking at my account right now and it's cratering. Come on, save me, bro. And Kilmeade's also the one a week ago who is like, come on, Trump, with the white supremacists, just please say that you don't like the man.
But you know what? He's not even saying, please don't, and I can't, and oh man, why'd you do that? He's actually perplexed that Donald Trump is so idiotic that he keeps doing these things. He can't understand. He goes, how'd he get himself in this position? He puts himself in a position where he can't even negotiate, correct? Now he's cornered in, and Nancy Pelosi has the leverage. Where's his leverage? Donald Trump is a horrible businessman. He's not good at negotiating. He's stuck in his own empty brain, and all he does is bounce around from side to side like a crazy person in a room. That's all that happens in Donald Trump's brain. He's not a negotiator. He's not a businessman. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, that much is clear. I don't know what you want. I mean, you remember like 2 weeks ago when Trump implied during a phoner to them that he's gonna come on every week, and Ducey says, well, hey, we haven't agreed to that. I really do wonder if this is like, they obviously want him to get reelected. I'm not gonna go, you know, like obviously they do, but I wonder if to some extent it is starting to get to them that he might not. Well, we're gonna talk about that a little bit later on, so let's not go too deep into that right now. We do have a lot of other stories to talk about, though.
Sorry,
before
John,
we get to that.
Yeah. Okay.
No. Continue.
One small thing, because Ducey talked about the $1,200 checks, and people are expecting that $1,200 in their bank account, and that'll be great and awesome for them. When was the first round of those $1,200 checks? April, maybe May at the latest. And so if you just woke up from a coma and you and that you went into right after the $1,200 check hit your account, you would say, man, I missed out on the last several months of $1,200 checks every month because it sounds like American people have been getting some kind of COVID relief through this whole time. No, that $1,200 check happened right then. Now suddenly after these several months of Republicans and Republican pundits and conservatives talking about how much American people need to get up off of their butts and get back to work in the middle of a COVID filled arena. Now, suddenly they need these $1,200 checks as if they've been getting them. No, they've been denied any kind of relief that we've already paid for. This is American people's money. So we can keep talking about how, oh, these people expect their checks. But for the past several months, you guys have been talking about how much they don't deserve their checks. Just pointing that out for you. Let's not act like you've been on this right path this whole time. This whole time you've been against the American people. So stop acting like you're for them now because the business roundtable said so. And now President Trump is tanking the stock market and your little money that's involved in it. That's what your motivation is. You have no care about what the American people have gone through and the $1,200 checks that you think they deserve now. You really don't care. I'm tired of this narrative that you really give a damn about us.
I agree. Couldn't be clearer that they don't.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today. And get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Has Donald Trump actually lost it? I mean, really, like if you have not been following the president on Twitter, good for you, good for your sanity, but some of us have to. And the last 24 hours have been madness. Now, I know what you're thinking. Yeah, but aren't all 24 hours for the president kind of crazy? Yes, that's true, but I think it's worse. He has been tweeting nonstop for a day. And the top, we're not gonna go through all of them because I honestly can't take it and I doubt you can either. But I wanna read just a few of the standouts from the most powerful person in the world's social media accounts over the last bit. He said this. Now, if you're on the podcast, you need to know, this is in all caps. Now that the radical left Democrats got caught cold in the non-friendly transfer of government, in fact, they spied on my campaign and went for a coup, we are entitled to ask the voters for 4 more years. Please remember this when you vote. I love the please in all caps. So he's saying there a lot, but the most important point is that is clearly a reference, JR. To with the question that he responded poorly to, which is, are you going to assure a peaceful transfer of power? And he said that he can't commit to that. And now he's saying, well, they didn't do a friendly transfer of power when of course they did. He didn't even win the popular vote, but he became president. And he's saying, we are entitled to ask the voters for 4 more years. Well, he's already running for re-election, so that's clearly not what he's talking about. He's implying something else, something not having to do with the normal flow of a campaign. And I think we all have kind of an idea of what that might be, JR.
What he's going to do or what he's already talking about?
I mean, what he's implying there about what asking the voters for 4 more years means.
Yeah, from 4 more years of disaster, destruction, and the subversion of our entire country. So in this case, it always bothers me when he likes to talk about how there was no peaceful transfer of power. Based on what do you expect to have happened? So after all this goes down and Hillary Clinton calls and tells you congratulations and all that, what else is supposed to happen? You're supposed to drop down and like slit your throat? I'm not sure. So if you lose a political campaign, are you then supposed to die? What happens next? What peaceful transition of power is supposed to happen next? She wasn't in the White House already, so does this mean she ran in, started beating on the doors? Like this narrative has been talked about with serious people on news shows that there wasn't a peaceful transition of power. Where was the violence? Peaceful. We're talking about peace versus violence. So where was the violence that was generated by Hillary Clinton and her team? Where were the people in the streets that said where were the people with the pink hats running around with guns ready to shoot any Trump supporters? None of that happened. But we are seeing shades of that for this next election. Now we are seeing him endorse and galvanize behind Proud Boys and white supremacists and say get out in the streets. In fact, he's saying go to the polling locations and make sure you intimidate voters before they even get there. So before the election, talk about a peaceful transition. How about a peaceful election? How about a peaceful voting day? None of that has been promised at all by this guy. So
no.
As much as he talks for the other side that there's this lack of peace from nearly 4 years ago, he's predicting a lack of peace in a month from his side. So I mean,
predicting it's requesting, and kind of.
Yeah, actually, you're right. Not even predicting, requesting it. So you can talk about all you want 4 years ago, but let's talk about reality and then also present day and what you're plotting right now.
Well, let's talk about reality and let's also, you know, beckon him back towards it, because that was an all caps rage tweet. Bear that in mind at the close of this video. But he goes on to respond to this tweet. So it is from Girlbot. I don't know if it's actually a bot. I don't know, but it sounds like it. That's not the crazy thing, though. It's that's a tweet from 2018, that the January of 2018. That's a 2.5 year old tweet that the president is responding to, and I don't even know how. Okay, but we're carrying on. Another all caps tweet. Dems want to shut down your churches permanently. Hope you see what is happening. Vote now. Yes, because Biden, you know, religious Biden wants to permanently shut down all churches. What are you even talking about? He says that.
Nobody knows.
He gets tweeted, somebody named Heather tweets the president, we don't have the graphic for this. I would wade through a sea of COVID infested water to vote for President Trump on November 3rd. And he quote retweets it, thank you, Heather. No, but like, I get that you're willing to do that. That's what a death cult is all about. But it's that he's kind of actually making you do that. And he really doesn't care if you get COVID. That's been clear. He's even kind of tweeting to you that he doesn't care if you get COVID. This is all in the last day. All in the last day. One more. Paul Sperry, who's this, like, I guess a journalist, sort of. He tweeted, the next SCOTUS pick likely will help pick the next president. Now you know how bloody this confirmation battle will be starting a week from today. To which Trump responds, it will be fast and easy. So look, I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt and say that the fast and easy is about the confirmation, not about the SCOTUS choosing the president. But that was a tweet about the SCOTUS pick choosing the president rather than the people, and the president was happy about it. Now, you might be confused and it's hard to follow because he retweeted Paul Sperry tweets like 24 times in the last 24 hours. Just retweet after retweet after retweet. And I'm left wondering why, what is going on with the president? Like this level of just manic tweeting. And then I remembered something we talked about earlier this week. Among the particularly worrisome side effects of dexamethasone, confusion, delirium, mania, and a higher risk of other infections. Now, is that affecting him? I don't know, but he's on that medication and he's clearly manic. He's clearly kind of ragey.
Yeah, the hard part is really seeing the difference. As you mentioned, it's kind of hard seeing the difference between his normal tweets and then what this is, because he's been on rage tweets in the middle of the night before where it goes wild for a while and people wondering what he was thinking or what exactly he was taking at the moment. But at least now we know some of the things that he's taken. So for people maybe to get a grasp of how this works, because he probably, as you mentioned, maybe he didn't go to sleep, but say he did at 3 a.m. and he woke up. It's one of those moments when, you know, people, this for folks that drink, people I've seen people do a bunch of crazy stuff after drinking. The next morning they go, man, I have no idea what I did yesterday. It's kind of one of those feelings, I think, for me. It's like, woof. Who wrote all these tweets under my account? I must have been hacked because I went in blacked out mode and I just went to tweeting. That's what the president has been doing lately. He's and again, if it's affected by the drugs or whatever, maybe someone should take it away from him in the meantime, in case, unless you don't want to be reeling and explaining what he did and why he said what he said, the way we've been doing for the past 4 years.
Yeah. I know it's like, yeah, he tweets crazy and we're sick of it. It's a lot. I get it. I'm sick of it too. He is still the president. He can do a lot unilaterally. And whether this is like, we're having a conversation about whether his manic behavior is just his normal crazy or if it's new crazy. That's not a good position to be in. And he still has to hopefully get reelected from his own point of view. Man, just buckle up for the period if he loses. Let's say he loses. Let's say he doesn't contest it somehow. Let's say that we're that lucky. It's still like 2 months of him as president with no accountability whatsoever. Buckle up for that period. Now we're gonna roll right through to another story just briefly. Let's turn to the RC block here. The list of Trump administration officials that has become infected in the past 2 weeks by COVID has increased by at least one, with Stephen Miller, one of his top aides and the progenitor of any number of cruel and inhumane Trump administration policies, has apparently been infected with COVID, saying, over the last 5 days, I have been working remotely and self-isolating, testing negative every day through yesterday. Today, I tested positive for COVID-19 and have been quarantined. At least 10 others like in the administration have gotten sick in the past week or so. He's also the latest member who was prepping the president for his debate. So if you didn't like that debate performance, to some extent, Stephen Miller is responsible for that. And so we don't, again, with all of these, we don't know for sure where or how or when he was infected, but it is possible it was during that debate prep with President Trump. So now he does have it, JR.
Well, I don't know. There was just my mindset, but I was like, that kind of makes sense. I was expecting this name last week, honestly. As close as he is, as you pointed out, and as how much he writes his policy and his speech and his approach to everything that he does is Stephen Miller, especially immigration things. So I think maybe he was concerned, or at least figured this last week. That's why he said he's been isolating, because I think he kind of knew this was coming down. It's a little impossible not to be in the line of this. And also, I don't know, man. Maybe I'm too negative or too cynical, but I think maybe he already knew even before this. Why would he say so beforehand? And maybe there's a calming period where he thinks it's easy for him to say it. It doesn't really matter if he's got it or when he's got it, because I don't know. He's not the president, even though he's in his ear. But this is just, this checks. This all checks out. His wife had it, I think, earlier this year as well.
It was a couple months ago. Yeah.
Yeah. So all this falls into place. I was actually surprised that he didn't really get it from her before, unless they don't really.
Yeah, he was lucky. Lucky, obviously, anybody's at risk. His wife has already gotten over it. She notably in the past 24 hours mocked Kamala Harris for wanting to be protected against coronavirus during the debate tonight. She already had it. She was lucky enough apparently to have a mild case and get through it. And now she has turned and she is mocking other people for not wanting to get this fatal illness. Now Stephen Miller has it. Just gonna give you a little bit of background on Stephen Miller over the past couple of years.
For those of you that don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much. But let's just go through a few things that are directly relevant to this. Miller, who has become one of the highest profile White House advisors, in part because of his hardline immigration views, has championed the president's message that the coronavirus pandemic doesn't represent an outsized threat to the US. Leading the writing team that crafted Trump's final Republican National Convention speech, Miller helped put forward a misleading message from the president that predicted a quick resolution to the ongoing crisis using dubious claims and figures. That now looks even crazier in hindsight, since the biggest hotspot in the country appears to be the White House. Mr. Miller pushed for invoking the president's broad public health powers back in 2019 when an outbreak of mumps spread through immigration detention facilities in six states. He tried again that year when border patrol stations were hit with the flu. When vast caravans of migrants surged towards the border in 2018, Mr. Miller looked for evidence that they carried illnesses. He asked for updates on American communities that received migrants to see if new disease was spreading there. So he was very interested in the spread of disease because it would help him to push his incredibly hardline, cruel immigration policies. He is considered one of the people who birthed the no exceptions, separate families, doesn't matter if it's an infant or a toddler, separate those families permanently if necessary. And he was willing to use concerns about disease to push for that. When it comes to the coronavirus, the messaging is all, nobody needs to worry about this. It's not a big deal. Certainly don't blame the president if it goes poorly. Oops, everyone, including myself, now has coronavirus. So look, obviously, like with everyone, you know, like I said, I don't wish coronavirus on my second worst enemy, just the first. So hope that he gets better and more importantly, doesn't spread it to more people. Unfortunately, it seems like a lot of them probably will because they just don't take it seriously. Even after this spread of coronavirus through the White House, the White House still doesn't seem to be taking it seriously. Trump is walking around without a mask and all of that.
Stephen Miller seems to have learned the one lesson that I think he learned last year when he did some news appearances. And every time his face appeared on anyone's TV screen, there was a general gag sound that came from the entire American people. They were like, oh my God, who is this guy? And why did they put him on TV? Everything he says is cringeworthy, is horrific, and shows how bad of a guy he is. Like, he's not good at hiding how evil he is. Like most of them can, and Trump has this weird appeal to his base. They love how horrible of a guy he is, but Stephen Hill doesn't even have that. So as soon as he looks up, people go, oh my God, like that's the bad guy. Like it's like the villain in the movie, you see it right away. So I haven't seen him on TV since probably last year, and he does seem like a background type of guy. He's good at injecting his hatred and fueling the president to carry out that hatred without actually having to put his face and his name to it directly. So I think he's good with sitting back and being isolated and quarantined for a bit while still continuing to push the hatred. Because just because this guy has the virus has no effect on what he's doing to affect this president. He's probably still having plenty of conversations and totally pressure on him to do what he's going to be doing.
Well, and Trump clearly still trusts him on these topics. I mean, the separation crisis and all of that, that hurt Trump in the public's eye. It's one of the reasons 2018 worked out the way it did. But they didn't jettison Stephen Miller. They've lost like 2/3 of the original 2016 team, but Stephen Miller is still around. I agree, he's very much behind the scenes. I think partially it's because while he is persuasive to Donald Trump, most warm-blooded mammals recoil. There's something unnatural about him. It also could be, I was just reminded in the Twitch chat by Rhetorico that you might recall, I'm just saying, it is a fact that he once went on TV having painted hair on the front of his head. I'm not saying anything, I'm just saying that is literally a thing that happened on a major news network. Obviously, hope that he gets well, you know, from the COVID, but that was a little bit weird. Anyway, with that said, and you know, much more importantly, again, I say this every day this week, but it is one thing that these Trump administration officials are getting COVID. Many of them supported the president's irresponsibility. They didn't seem to be bothered by it much at all. I feel far worse for those who have to work at the White House, you know, the housekeepers, catering staff, security, all of that, because they're not getting contact tracing to protect them. Many of them, they're not going to get flown to Walter Reed. They're not going to get, you know, full write-ups on the New York Times, but they are every bit as important, and I would argue far more important than any of these other individuals that we are talking about.
Yeah, it's an illustration of just how we care about, you know, the hierarchy of who we care about and who we don't.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, on JR, you know, a bit of good news. I'm glad that the plane that just flew over your house missed it. So that's good.
I didn't even hear it. Yeah. I can fix that.
Okay. No, it's okay. Don't worry about it. Now, with that, again, we have so much to get to. We're going to get back to comments and super chats in just a little bit, but I just want to roll through one more topic because today is, after all, debate day. So let's turn to that now. Ever since it was revealed that a number of White House officials became infected with coronavirus, there's been a lot of concern about the future of debates. And Kamala Harris, who was set to debate Mike Pence tonight, wanted to be sure that there would be social distancing and there would be some sort of protection in the event that Pence might have the disease. Now, supposedly he does not, according to the most recent tests, but we're gonna talk a little bit about how trustworthy that might be. Now, she wanted partitions and she has gotten partitions. Take a look at this photo showing the debate stage. Those are the partitions that they got. Those little loops. Somebody responded on Twitter, just a perfect tweet, same energy, showing effectively a gate to a big field. Yeah, technically it's there. That would not make me feel confident. I mean, if we can go back to those partitions, do they not think that germs can sort of slip past those? I mean, that is, why not put those together so at least they're twice as wide?
You know what? I'm honestly, if I'm the moderator, I'm like, they're out to get me, bro. There's nothing between the moderator.
Yeah, it's not protecting the moderator at all. There's nothing.
You know what?
Why aren't the desks farther apart? If I was, you know, I know it was like it was a thing on SNL or whatever, but if I was Kamala Harris and I walked onto that stage, I would drag that desk 5 feet further away from either of them, not just Mike Pence, but the moderator as well. I know we're partially joking around, but there are many government officials that now have this fatal illness. Why are they playing these games? You couldn't get a bigger piece of plastic than that?
Yeah, John, I'm one of these people that compares things like this just subconsciously. So since the pandemic's happened and since stores have opened up and you go and see checkout people at the cashier registers and everything, I compare each store and their level of surroundings to protect their employees. Cause I'm like, man, these guys gotta sit in this all day. When I'm in here for 30 minutes, I'm trying to get the hell out of here as fast as possible. So imagine if I'm here for an 8-hour shift. Anyway, so I'm looking at that and I'm seeing how much they protect. And I was like, man, Home Depot has it down because Home Depot's got the equipment right there in store, right? They got people that can build this. Like, you know, people that work at Home Depot know what they're doing. The surrounding plexiglass around Home Depot people is impressive. And if Home Depot in Inglewood, California that I visited can protect their workers with a decent, and it's thick too, plexiglass around them. I'm thinking, man, maybe there's something it can do for a vice presidential debate, maybe for the entire country. I don't know. I mean, just gonna throw it out there in case. Maybe they should travel to this particular Home Depot location in Inglewood, ask for a few of their dividers, and then slap it on that stage, and maybe we can do something else about this. The incompetence when it comes to something like this is appalling to me. We can protect people at stores with something better than this, but we can't do anything decent. This is for show. They're not serious. Nobody thinks this is serious.
I think it's not only for show, and I'm honestly, I don't even know who is hosting it. But if I was Kamala Harris, I would feel like this was intended to mock me. Honestly, like I'm being totally fair. Obviously, I'm not the biggest Kamala Harris fan in the world. You know, I only like her a billion times more than Mike Pence. But like, if I say I want your assurances that you will care about my safety and my health, and they gave me that, I would feel like, oh, message received. I get how much you care about this. You don't care at all. And you know, it's one thing for Kamala Harris. She's young. She seems to be in very good health. But for Joe Biden, that's not gonna cut it. That's not gonna cut it. And so, you know, with that, I want to turn to that. So look, Kamala Harris is debating Mike Pence tonight. Supposedly Joe Biden is supposed to debate Donald Trump once again next week, which very much falls into the range of time when, even assuming he is doing as well with his recovery as they say he is, he could still be infected with the virus. Now, I want to show you a video because in it, Joe Biden says something that I think is very reasonable. And then I want you to see the response from Fox News to his very reasonable request.
Do you feel safe in the same room as somebody who still may have COVID?
Well, I think if he still has COVID, we shouldn't have a debate.
Haven't the medical authorities been telling us all this time that to avoid infection, you stay a certain distance apart and you wear masks, and then even in certain circumstances, you might have a partition that separates you from others. And that way you can get on with life. There's a real need in this country to get on with life. And presidential and vice presidential debates are a part of that. So the idea that if the president is still potentially infected in some way, that you couldn't stage an in-person debate, I think flies in the face of all that we've been told about this disease. Now, if we're now to believe that all the precautionary measures that we've talked about, that people who have, that are carrying the virus can transmit it despite distancing and despite masks and other precautionary measures, then we're in a whole new ballgame.
Okay, so JR, Biden, who is 93 years old, not wanting to debate someone who literally has the virus in his system confirmed at that time, that seems reasonable to me. Just to, let's start off there. Is Joe Biden being unfair in some way?
That should be the starting point. There should be zero people that have any objection to this. That's the starting point. So as we've been talking about, the president has COVID. Maybe you don't believe it. I don't know. Does Brit Hume not believe it? But anyway, so if someone has COVID, the starting point should be, well, we shouldn't have any debates until he's over this. That's like the tracker for whether or not you're gonna have debates is if he gets over this. And honestly, after that, I wouldn't still have any debates with this guy. What's the point of that? So Brit Hume talking about moving on with life, part of this includes having presidential debates. I thought moving on with life was getting back to work, enjoying your family, going back to school. That's what they've been touting, is moving on with life. What does the presidential debates have to do with moving on with life? This is a decision that's gonna be decided by voters on November 3rd. So what does this part have to do with it? And by the way, if they wanna have a debate, they can have a remote debate. We're having a remote conversation right now. So if you really wanna do things, it's 2020 and America's the strongest country on earth. We can do whatever the hell we want. Why don't we do whatever the hell we want then? Oh, so we have to be kept to only having this style of debate? No, what you wanna do is try to make Joe Biden look like he's this scared guy who doesn't wanna debate Donald Trump, when in reality, Donald Trump should be trying to avoid all these debates after that last performance. And one more comparison. So the way people always talk about diseases, and in this case, a virus, let's ask Brit Hume this. I'm sure he's not doing it anymore. But if you encounter a woman who's positive for AIDS and says, you know what, let's have some sex, Brit, but just put on a condom, I promise you won't get it. I bet you he won't do it. I bet you he won't do it. Anytime someone tells you they have this extremely deadly virus, and you say, oh, it doesn't matter, just put up a plexiglass and then we'll have the debate anyway because they got it 4 days ago, we'll do it anyway. No, you're not gonna do it, bro. It's always that question. It's when it comes to things like, I guess people didn't connect with for real, which is STDs. You're not gonna do it, bro.
Yeah, Brit Hume there is a fully grown man who makes millions of dollars to talk in a very serious way about politics. You'd assume then, oh, well, he's a serious guy, he's honest. What he said about, well, if they're now saying that a mask and social distancing isn't good enough, then I guess they've been lying all along. What are you talking about, man? Can we be adults for just a second? The mask is a layer of protection. It decreases the chance that if you have it and you're wearing a mask, you'll spread it to someone. It decreases the chance that if it's coming at you and you don't have it, that you'll get it. It's not foolproof. Distance also lowers the chance of spread. It's not foolproof. Even both isn't foolproof. And when you know, it's not like maybe somebody has coronavirus, we know he has coronavirus. Be an adult, be a serious person. No, no one should be exposed to that. Brit Hume, do you wanna go and hug Donald Trump and rub cheek to cheek with him? No,
hell
you don't,
no.
Because it's a risk to his life. You are being so disingenuous, so fake. They did the same thing when Trump did his little drive-by while he was in Walter Reed, saying, oh, well, now they're saying the Secret Service are gonna be endangered by being in the car with him. They're wearing masks. I thought the masks were protection. Yes, they're a layer of protection, but we're in a sealed box with somebody shedding virus. You still want more protection than that. Soldiers wear bulletproof vests. Oh, but now we're offended someone's shooting at them? Yeah, because it's a bit of protection, but they're not Iron Man now.
Exactly.
And I have to explain this to people who make $20 million a year.
It's insane. I love that example. So cops, they have a protection. They have all these armored vehicles. They got an army of cops surrounding them. They've got bulletproof vests. So shouldn't it be okay for us to shoot at them? Oh, I wish I'd have thought of that example. It's so perfect, John.
Yeah, Trump was saying so they're perfect. Throwing cans of soup and tuna. Well, okay, they got shields and riot shields and bulletproof vests. You're talking about soup. I thought they were protected. I guess that doesn't do anything. It's just so fake. Anyway, two other issues. One, he literally said there, if the president is still infected in some way, what are you talking about?
What does that mean?
In the one way, He has the virus. It's not hypothetical. It's not a million different ways. He had it, and he had it apparently so bad that at least temporarily he needed to be hospitalized and put on oxygen for it. Again, I have to lift Brit Hume up to being an adult. And finally, and in terms of, I totally agree with you, JR, saying that they're gonna try to pitch Joe Biden as wanting to avoid this. Let me do the thing that I like doing more than anything else on the show, saying when I was wrong. I was dead wrong about how the debate was likely to turn out. I thought Trump was gonna steamroll him and Biden was gonna appear weak by comparison. I was wrong. That didn't happen, and Biden has improved in the polls after the debate. Joe Biden's not afraid of debating Donald Trump again. He's got a huge buffer in the polls and precedent to believe that he would win. So if anything, it should be Donald Trump. Now, apparently he still wants to do it, but you gotta be protected. They're gonna put a 97-year-old man next to Typhoid Mary. It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. Biden's not going to agree to it.
Honestly, as much as they were complaining about how people were hoping for Donald Trump's death, I think a certain percentage of these folks also wouldn't mind if Joe Biden caught it. Let's just keep real. And as far as this scenario goes. And let's ask the Brit Humes, the Laura Ingrams, the Sean Hannitys, the Brian Kilmeads of the world. Hey, since you love the guy so much, and since he's so invincible, the Greg Gutfeld, since he's so invincible, and this is such a hoax, go do an in-person interview with him. Sit 2 feet from him and let him talk to you for an hour. Are you gonna do it? Do you love him that much? It's an exclusive. You'd be the only one to do it. It'd be tons of ratings. Go get your ratings. Sit in front of him without a mask, since it doesn't mean anything, and let him talk to you. Let him spit a few particles in your face and see if you enjoy that. Are you gonna do it, Brit Hume? 80-year-old Brit Hume, are you gonna do it? No, you're not gonna do it. You just wanna talk about how someone else should do it.
Yeah, and he shouldn't, but nobody else should have to be exposed to that either. Look, we're being fair. We're being fair on TDR. Cenk Uygur, the father of TYT, likes to make bold predictions. And yesterday on the Young Turks, he did just that. Take a look at this bit.
So the election is about a month away, and I'm calling it. It's official. Donald Trump will lose, Joe Biden will win. So now, obviously, some will think that that's a bold call to make this far out. But I've been covering politics for 25 years, and you guys are gonna love this. I'm less biased than everyone else in news. So let me explain why. The polling clearly indicates this election is not close. It's not anywhere near close. The last two polls have Biden winning nationally at 14 points and 16 points. I know everyone's a nervous wreck over what happened in 2016, but you can't ask for an 18-point lead. That is literally as big a lead as I have ever seen. And so, this is not anywhere near a close election.
Okay, so that was a video that they put out yesterday titled Cenk Uygur, the 2020 election is over. And I was watching live, and Anna was not having it. She was frustrated with him, I think, that he was doing it at all. But that's the plight of being Anna, is having to be frustrated with Cenk. But he is predicting, based on the polls, Trump just isn't going to bring it back in the next, 4 weeks. This thing is over. So right now we're debating, JR, and I'm gonna get a vote, you're gonna get a vote, and Twitch is gonna get a vote. Is Cenk right, or is he way too confident at this point? What do you think?
I guess to give an indicator of where I stand on this, I believe in polls the way that I believe in doing stories with graphs and flow charts and all that stuff. I'm just against it. Totally against it. And John does love the graphs. And by the way, John loves those things, but they're helpful. I get it. I used to love those things when I was in school. I don't like them when I'm talking about politics. Anyway, because there's way too many other factors that come into place that I don't think can be tabulated in a correct manner. Yes, there's all these technical scientific studies, and people go through these ways to conduct polls. And then this poll is biased, and it's 75% this kind of way slanted. Oh, but this one's 50-50, and that one has the history of this. All these things have to come into play for us to collect 17 different polls and then put it in a big pot, mix the stew around, and say, let's see which one floats to the top first. Before we put it in a can and throw it at cops. So as so I don't like polls. And so he's basing off of polls, which I will agree to a degree. And this conversation with Cenk and Anna went on for a while, where he clarified that this is different than any other issues when we have a close poll and therefore we make a decision based off a 5-point lead, but we have a 16-point lead. And then what about those swing states where he's even tied in them, or he's barely, or Trump is barely winning states that he should be landsliding in? All those points, I hear you. But I just don't see the value in basing it off it and banking on it a month beforehand just because it looks good. How about we just go and vote? Because what I don't like is for lazy people, which Americans are the best at being, sitting down, watching someone on TV or internet and then say, yeah, the election's over, man, it's over, man. You don't need to worry about this anymore. And they go, okay, good. Ugh, COVID is rampant. The cases are upticking. I'm just gonna stay home because it's already over. That's what I think can happen with this. It cools off people from going out there and voting anyway, because they're like, well, I'm gonna let these other people risk themselves. Oh man, the mail-in thing was a bit of a situation. I'm a little worried about it. I'm not gonna do that either. I'm just gonna sit back and watch the results because it's already over, right? It's already over. I hate it so much.
Everything you're saying is so reasonable, but the format demands that you vote. Is he right or is he overconfident? Oh,
that Trump is definitely lost right now?
Yeah, he's said it's over.
That he's 100%
wrong. 100%
wrong.
We have an emoji.
Now that doesn't mean that it's that 100% wrong now means that 100% Trump's gonna win. It just means
I get what you're saying.
Way you can predict that it's over right now.
You're saying it's too early to call. It's too early to call, which is what Anna said. Anna said, you know, she's looking at the polling for some of these swing states and she's thinking that it's too early to call. So both totally legitimate positions. So you're a vote that he's way too overconfident. I'm looking right now at Twitch, which gets a vote on TDR. You know, go Dragon Squad on Twitch. They say that Cenk, the percent who say he's right is at 28%. Way too overconfident is 72%. That is a fairly dominant result. So it looks like, regardless of what I say, TDR has spoken. Cenk is overconfident. So there's really no point in me voting because I can only either look as smart as you or totally wrong. But I'm not going to waste this opportunity. I think that Cenk is often unbearable. I think he likes to make bold predictions. And one of the reasons he likes to do that is because when you make a prediction, it turns out wrong. Nobody seems to remember most of the time. all that said, I think he's right. I think he's right. Now, bear in mind all the context around what I'm saying right now.
Right.
How many times have I been telling people it's not election day, it's election week, if not election month? Trump isn't trying to win the popular vote or even the electoral college, really. He's setting up for other ways of becoming president. All of that is true. And you need to go vote. Vote.org, tyt.com/vote. Register, go out and vote. Vote by mail if you can. Vote early if you can. Vote in person if you have to, but be careful and socially distance. All of that said, I mean, I'm looking at these polls. I know, I'm sorry that I'm looking at polls. This isn't 2016, man. This is, it looks more like the 80s than it does 2016. I mean, I'm gonna show you a few of the things that I have seen recently. And then I'm gonna give you one surprise appearance, one bit of evidence in my favor that you would not expect that I would give. So I love this. Trump tweeted a few weeks back, Rasmussen was one of the most accurate polls in 2016. Now understand he says that because Rasmussen is always biased towards the Republicans. He says, right, actually, I think based on crowds and enthusiasm, of which Sleepy Joe has none, that we are much higher than 51%. So that was what he said, Rasmussen. Most accurate polls in 2016. This was tweeted by Ben Collins, who then tweeted the image of 3 weeks later. And then this today, National Rasmussen poll, Biden 52%, Trump 40, Biden up 12. That was today that came out. That's the poll that's biased towards Trump. He's up by 12. I noticed this. Take a look at this tweet. This is a retweet of mine. Trump is up by 2 in Missouri. So hey, that's a poll where Trump's up by 2. Trump won Missouri in 2016 by more than 18 points. Like, he's still gonna win Missouri, but it's a 16-point swing. Man, South Carolina, this isn't even about Trump. South Carolina has been moved by the Cook Political Report to a toss-up between Jamie Harrison and Lindsey Graham. In 2014, Graham won re-election 55.3 to 38.8. People aren't having it anymore. And that doesn't mean Trump's gonna lose. And it certainly doesn't mean that he's not gonna stay on as president, whether he loses or wins. But like, that you need a lot of October surprises to move the polls 12, 14 points. And it's not just the national. I know people say that's just the national and that's not actually how things go. But right. Like, you gotta look at the, we're not talking about swing states now. We're talking about Trump is even or down on a handful of states that he absolutely has to win to have a chance. And he's even or down in all of them. Now, all of this could change, and I mostly make this video so that if Trump does end up legitimately winning, right wingers could clip it out and be like, oh, look at how confident they were. But I'm just, I have to look at the information that's out there. And I just think that you don't come back from this with 3.5 weeks, certainly not with Trump, who can't learn. So I'm gonna vote in the minority. I'm gonna cast a dissenting opinion in the TDR Supreme Court here and say, I think that Cenk is unbearable, but I do think he's right. I do think
the only October surprise you need left is to be surprised that America still consists of a large number of racists, whether they wanna admit it or not. A very large portion of racists. And racists don't care about anything else except being racist. So they can say all they want that they don't want to vote for racists, or they'll never vote for that guy again. And look what he did to me. Oh, but he still hates everyone else except for white people. Okay, I think I'm back on his side. Look at the Dilbert creator. That's a perfect example.
That's true.
Did you see that whole thing of how he goes right back and forth immediate to that? And their motivations are never based in what's good for the country, what's good for themselves. It's only based in the opposition to the other side. It's some kind of football game to them. So people will get motivated by their racism and their team rah rah. And like I said, man, the fact that we've gone to this point in this country, people are surprised at the racism that exists, which I'm not. Then you will only be surprised again that racism can transcend into backing the biggest racist we've ever had in modern day presidency.
I don't discount the number of racists. I think that it's absolutely massive. But I think nothing about Trump supporters over the past 3 years implies to me that what they're nervous about in 2020 is expressing a love for Donald Trump. That's all they are. That's all they do is talk about how much they love Donald Trump. And they're driving, they're riding and sinking boats to talk about how much they love Donald Trump. They've got truck caravans going through Portland to say that they love Donald Trump. I think they are quite comfortable saying they like Donald Trump. And I could be wrong. And no matter what happens, go out there and vote and tell other people to vote, because we can't just win. It has to be a landslide. I'm just saying, at a certain point, if it was any other election and the one candidate was up 12 to 16 points 3 or 4 weeks out, would we be as nervous about calling it? I don't think so. I get it that 2016, the national polls said that Hillary would win by a couple of points. And it turns out that even though that was true and she did, she lost. So people are nervous. I get it. I'm saying the numbers just look pretty strong this way. Anyway, but again, don't let that change your behavior between now and then.
Yes, that's the main thing. Yes, the numbers look a certain way. Enjoy the numbers in silence and then go out and vote.
Okay. Well, I can't be silent. If I did, I would be fired. But I will defer to Justice Jackson and Justice Twitch. They have overruled me. Cenk is overconfident. But I had your back.
Don't forget Anna as well.
That's true. Yeah. I don't know if I'm willing to give them formal votes. But Anna's a very reasonable person. So that swayed me quite a bit. It made me a lot more cautious. I don't know. But yes. Anyway, that's the way it looks right now. With that, we're gonna very quickly go through one more story just because it's just too important not to, and then we'll let you go, JR. But this concerns me and it concerns you. It concerns all of us in California. So let's talk briefly about this.
Yeah.
The fires in California have gotten so bad that they're now a different sort of fire than we've ever had before. Take a look at this. On Monday, the August Complex Fire in Northern California expanded beyond 1 million acres, elevating it from a mere mega fire to a new classification, the gigafire, never used before in a contemporary setting in the state. We've got gigafires now, because the fires are too big for our previous classification system. At 1.03 million meters, the fire is larger than the state of Rhode Island and is raging across 7 different counties. an amalgamation of several fires caused when lightning struck dry forests in August. The vast conflagration has been burning for 50 days and is only half contained. It's been almost 2 months. It is half contained, and it's the size of Rhode Island. That is, they're saying it's mind-boggling. It has burned 4 million acres. It's 1 million acres now, or as of Monday, I guess. At least it's caused dozens of deaths and thousands of lost buildings. So we, like, even here in TDR, we haven't been talking about the fires much the past week or two, but it is still very much out there.
Well, I'm not good on like fire knowledge or how these things can be contained and the processes that go in it. I just see the planes flying over with the red dust, which appears to be a red dust, dropping it over. And I'm wondering, as this becomes such a normalcy, not even becomes, has become such a normalcy in parts of the country, there, I wonder how much attention is put into how we can extinguish these in a different way, or what kind of technological changes we can make. Because obviously, the approach to prevent these hasn't been taken with any kind of seriousness. So as we see devastating things like this, and we've had many people who think warn us of these types of things that could happen, and then we're told that they're just trying to scare us, and they're being paid off, and they're cartoon figures, and none of these things are real. And oh my God, you want to spend that much on this when nothing's happening? I have a snowball that I can show you in January. So as all those things keep getting said, I'm almost ready to not abandon it, but let's focus on now trying to put these out until we get a chance to get people that are in positions of power that can help us do something about this. Help us address it before it happens. It's similar with gun violence, and I've said this many times. Any kind of small measures that have been put in place to prevent gun violence, and people say, oh, preventative measures don't work. Well, you would never know, because if they prevented it, it didn't happen, idiot. Mm-hmm. So putting in preventative measures to stop gun violence, if nobody gets shot, that's a good thing. So when people do get shot and we say we need more preventative measures, I don't see how that doesn't, that's not a natural equation. So same thing with fires. Yeah. We need to maybe find a way to help put these out better, which again, I'm an idiot when it comes to these things, so I don't know if that's even possible. But then before that, we need to combine this with some kind of way to stop it. But until then, until we find someone who's willing to take it seriously, this is just our reality.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, but like the president already said, we need to rake more. That's all that we need to do is rake more, and we'll be fine. Like, he literally came to California to say that. We have a gigafire and he thinks we need more rakes. I'm not sure if he's gonna give us the funding for the rakes, but that's what he's got for us. I saw a comment asking us if we were in a safe place. Yes, both JR and I are in LA, are in a very safe place. Thank you for your concern, but a lot of people in their property are not. And all of what I've said is like the idea of a gigafire, I think, is scary. There's a layer scarier that we're about to get to. But first of all, the connection to climate change. The parched landscape makes larger fires more likely. So everything's drier because it's hotter, so the fires are more likely. Big wildfires are 3 times more common across the West than they were 50 years ago, while the wildfire season is 3 months longer than it once was. That is according to an analysis by Climate Central. Now we get to the scariest part. Meteorologists are warning that the impending arrival of the powerful seasonal gusts known as the Diablo wind could make the Northern California wildfires exponentially worse. You can see that they contribute to other fires. I had never heard of the Diablo wind before, but that's the scariest thing I think I've ever heard in my life. And why wouldn't the Diablo wind spread fire beyond its gigafire? I don't know what comes after the gigafire. Is it the petafire? I don't know. Is it the Google fire? I don't know. But we apparently now have to worry about Diablo as well.
You said the petafire or file? Because that's QAnon talk. That's QAnon talk, John.
Yeah. Oh God. The fire burns the ground and adrenochrome comes out. But anyway, no, this is terrible. People have already died. A lot of buildings have already been destroyed, and more will. They've been dealing with it for literally months now, and they are like halfway contained. And that's before this wind comes and potentially makes things worse. So again, a little reminder of the stakes in the election. You know, having a president who actually believes that this stuff is real would be nice. But also a reminder that while everyone gets more and more focused on the election, including us here, like the next 3 or 4 weeks are gonna be very election heavy. I apologize in advance. Let's bear in mind, there's a lot of other stuff going on, ongoing problems from even before Donald Trump that we do have to return to deal with. Very excited to welcome back to the program the editor at large for Media Matters for America, Parker Malloy. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. I've been using your website more than like ever before to track the way the right-wing media recently has responded to some of the big developments, Trump getting COVID, the debate, and all of that stuff. And we wanted to talk about a couple of the pieces of work that you've put out recently, including we're going to start with one topic that everyone, I guess, has just forgotten is a thing. But like Trump just 1 week ago, less than a full week ago when we're recording this, basically gave the nod to the Proud Boys that they should stand by and watch to see what happens during the election. Now you've done a lot of research into the way that Fox News and the right have sort of talked about Gavin McInnes and the Proud Boys. What are some things that people need to know if they're not that familiar with this topic?
Sure. So Gavin McInnes is the founder of the Proud Boys, and he was the co-founder of Vice magazine, which was, you know, that was something. but he hasn't been affiliated with them in quite some time. But so a few years back in, I think it was 2016, he founded this group called the Proud Boys, where it's basically just a bunch of Trump supporting dudes who like to go around and cause trouble, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he's talked about this group and how they will, you know, he encourages violence, and, you know, he just likes to get in fights and talks about how great getting in fights is. It's just kind of his whole, like, it's a very macho kind of group. He calls it a gang. But it's this like macho kind of group where they go from town to town and have rallies and protests and stuff like that, but they're pretty extreme. I mean, mm-hmm. they're right up there with other groups like that Patriot Prayer, for instance. Very similar in the sense that they will, you know, kind of go into cities like Portland, for instance, kind of looking for trouble.
Yeah,
and they tend to find it. But for years leading up to that, the founding of that, and even a little bit after, McInnes was kind of a regular on Fox News. Mm-hmm. He used to appear on that show Red Eye for a while. He made dozens of appearances on there. He appeared on Hannity fairly regularly. And this whole time he was still the gross, disgusting person that he is. Mm-hmm. He would still go and say sexist things about women. He was massively transphobic. That was my first ever encounter with him, was online in 2014 after he wrote something really nasty about trans people. But just going beyond that, you know, Fox kept having him on and mm-hmm. kept kind of rehabilitating his image and lifting him up as you know, as the Proud Boys kind of got started. So Fox kind of threw him a lifeline when nothing else was out there. It kind of kept him in the mainstream after he had long distanced himself from mm-hmm. from Vice. So in a sense, Fox kind of propped up the Proud Boys so they could get started. And what's really interesting about all of this, about the Proud Boys as a group, is that they are everything that Fox talks about there being on the left when it comes to violence in the streets and, you know, fighting and stuff like that, where they're like, why won't the left denounce mm-hmm. denounce Antifa, you know, that sort of thing. It's the Proud Boys kind of embody everything that they're telling Democrats that they need to denounce.
But yeah.
The Proud Boys are doing it on the right. For instance, after a group of Proud Boys got into a fight outside outside of a Gavin McInnes speech in New York in October 2018, Fox News the next day they led with a story where they were like leftist violence, and they were showing footage of the Proud Boys getting into fights and Gavin McInnes running around mm-hmm. with a sword. I don't know why he had a sword, but he did.
He seems like the type.
Yeah.
And let's be clear here too, that like, so the, yes, it's the thing that Fox says the left will do. They'll imply that the left does, but this isn't just sort of the implication that the Proud Boys, like we think, oh, they're kind of violent. Like he says, no, to be a Proud Boy, you have to get in a fight. We are going to come, we're going to fight people. Like they could not be more open about that as the goal of what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. They're a group that's You know, we put together a really great video, I think, over at Media Matters, just kind of rounding up a lot of McInnes's public statements on fighting and violence, and they're pretty brutal. You know, he advocates for punching women in the face, and he says fighting solves problems, and you know, and a lot of people clearly take him literally, because there have been Proud Boys who've gotten arrested at events for starting fights and for, you know, stuff like that. So it's concerning when Trump gives them essentially a shout out and tells them to stand by, which maybe he meant stand down, but by saying stand by, they got the message. They immediately kind of started running with that, you know, stand back and stand by, and selling merch and stuff like that.
Yeah. So how did Fox News respond to that? I mean, as you laid out, Gavin McInnes had been on multiple shows. They know this guy. Like, you know, the red eye might be gone, but Greg Gutfeld is still on Fox News. So how did they respond to what the president said, and you know, what the president was being asked to say about this group?
Yeah, well, there was a lot of pushback on Fox, which really shouldn't surprise anyone, I guess. On Fox, there was a lot of you know, not really playing up their connections with the group, kind of obviously. But anytime someone would speak up and would kind of press Trump on why he wouldn't just do the easy thing and denounce white supremacy, or why he wouldn't denounce it a certain way, you would get hosts who would go out and, you know, straight up attack their own colleagues to be like, why, you know, why are you falling into this trap? Why are you asking, you know, asking these sorts of questions? He clearly denounces white supremacy, yada yada yada, you know. So they do this thing, and it happens a lot, and you see it happen across a lot of different sort of areas of Fox News, where they will take something that's happening and they will only highlight the bad things that happen when it's someone on the left doing them, as opposed to someone on the right. So that's where you get this sort of idea where it's, oh, only conservatives get suspended on Twitter, or all this violence is only coming from the left, or any number of examples where they create this sort of reality where one side, where it's a good versus evil kind of setup, where they're always being bullied by tech companies and targeted for violence in the streets and stuff like that, that just doesn't match up with reality.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that could be like the tagline, Fox News.
Fox News, not quite reality.
Not quite matching up with reality. But there is one other area of Fox News coverage over the past week that I would love to get your view on, because you are forced by your job to watch a lot of it while I can afford to just cherry pick and see some of the clips. It's easy, I think, for a lot of people to forget that the Trump tax story just came out 9 days ago, but Trump got COVID, so people stopped talking about it. Still hypothetically an important story that the president might have committed tax fraud, and even if he didn't, he wasn't really paying taxes. You had an awesome article talking about the way that Fox covered that in comparison to other stories in the past about people not paying their taxes. What did you find in your research?
Yeah, so in this story that I did, where I was looking at, I looked at the past New York Times stories that they did on Trump's taxes, which they've now done three over the past, you know, past couple of years. There was one in 2018, one in 2019, and then this most recent one. And each time, the way Fox would cover it would always kind of find a way to justify it, find a way to say, well, actually, this proves that he's smart, or that he outthought the IRS, or, you know, that these are these problems that were created, and he was just exploiting existing loopholes, or that was 20 years ago. But this most recent story, I think, it feels like it was almost crafted to kind of obliterate a lot of these past arguments, because they're recent tax returns, and he sent, you know, since a lot of this has happened, has You know, he overhauled the tax system, and you know, so there's that. But in the past, back around 2010, 2012, that sort of time frame, there was a big kind of push on Fox, and it kind of made its way into the 2012 presidential election, where Republicans had this kind of mantra of it's the takers versus the makers, you know, the job creators versus everyone else, that sort of thing. And a lot of, you know, it was based on this idea that there are, you know, there's this broad section of America that doesn't pay taxes, that just leeches off the government, that sort of idea. And So you'd see a lot of stories. Sean Hannity did this a lot, where he would just rail against people who, in his view, didn't pay enough taxes. And a lot of times he would just kind of distort the facts, which shouldn't come as a surprise. But in 2013, for instance, he slammed Obama for only paying, what was it, 18.4% an effective tax rate of 18.4%. on $608,000 in income, because he had donated like $150,000 or something along those lines. But Hannity was trying to call him a hypocrite for doing that, and saying that Biden was also a hypocrite, because Biden had said around that time that paying taxes is patriotic. And then if you look further back, you could go back to 2004, where Hannity would go after John Kerry and, you know, John Kerry and his wife, and saying that, oh, look at these rich people, they're not paying enough taxes, or they're using these loopholes, and that's wrong. And obviously, I mean, Sean Hannity makes a ton of money. I'm sure he makes use of loopholes where he can find them. I doubt that he is just feeling patriotic and sending giant checks to the treasury for no reason. But when it comes to Trump's taxes, it's impossible to get through this bubble to make something hit. There's nothing that Trump could do, in my opinion, that would make Hannity go, yeah, he really got that one wrong, or yeah, this was a real issue. You know, Hannity, Lou Dobbs, these are guys you can't Trump is gonna be able to do more or less whatever he wants and still get praised by them. And you know, in the case of Trump's taxes, you know, in this most recent one, Hannity responded by just saying that he wants to see the New York Times taxes. And I'm not sure if he meant the company or the reporters, but that's not related.
You know, and what would they? What would you find in their taxes that would mean that Donald Trump hasn't done something wrong? I understand the desire to just like both sides everything. Both sidesing the target of reporting and the reporters seems like a big waste of time. So it, despite the, you know, you laid out like nearly 20 years of consistent opposition to politicians not paying their taxes. And as you said, this story seems tailor-made to obliterate the arguments they've made. It hasn't actually changed any of the way that Fox News has been covering this.
No, and I think that you will see that across the board on any number of subjects, where they'll be hit with something that makes them look like hypocrites, but they just keep reporting through it. They don't acknowledge the hypocrisy. You know, earlier this week I was looking at the way that conservative media covered Hillary Clinton after she fainted on 9/11 back in 2016 versus how they're covering Trump now. And there's no acknowledgement that back in 2016, Hannity, he had a panel on there demanding to see a brain scan of Hillary Clinton. But now they're all very, very much in favor of patients having their privacy respected. So yeah, there's no consistency, which I think kind of makes Fox especially dangerous, because most people will own up to mistakes that they make, but when it comes to propagandists, it works against them to own up to that or to apologize for something they've screwed up.
Well, let me ask, I guess most people, I mean, it's fun to note that Sean Hannity is being hypocritical, totally, but I don't think many people expect him not to be. The one area where I am actually interested to see if you saw any evidence that they did actually change for the story is that on Fox and Friends, Brian Kilmeade sort of criticized Donald Trump this morning about saying he's not going to be negotiating around COVID. He was somewhat critical of Trump not denouncing white supremacists after the debate. I mean, somewhat critical is about as good as you're going to get at this point. Did you happen to see anything on Fox and Friends that implied that there might be something to this story?
No, and in the past, it has in the past they've been some of his biggest defenders on the New York Times tax stories. In 2018, mm-hmm. they were saying how it made him smart, and it was proof that he was a successful businessman if he had all this money to lose and stuff like that. And I feel like a lot of the times you'll see pushback on Fox and Friends or on any Fox show, really. Anytime there's pushback on something Trump says or something he does, it feels less like him being criticized in the media and more them trying to guide him in a certain direction, like mm-hmm. you know, because they know he watches. They know that, yeah, he's their number one fan. So when you hear Brian Kilmeade saying, "I think this was a mistake," it really feels to me more like he's trying to say, you know, "Mr. President, please do something different."
Yeah.
And sometimes he does.
That's true. Yeah, maybe it is less criticism and more advice.
Yeah.
Well, look, I want to thank you as always for doing the hard work of actually exposing yourself to the unfiltered thoughts of these people, because the topics are very important. So we do value that, and also for you joining us on the show today, Parker Malloy, yeah. Media Matters. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.